Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Grid Gas Bags podcast. You're here with Eleanor and...
Katrina, hello. We are post-qualifying for Saudi Arabia. Now, this weekend looked like it was going to be stock standard, but we have a couple of... I'm not going to say minor deviations.
Oh, yeah.
But deviations.
Yeah, minorish. So, essentially, not really much happened between Bahrain and Saudi Arabia, but because this race is also a Saturday night race, everything has been shifted a day earlier. So, like, media day, which is usually a Thursday, has been moved to Wednesday, and everything shifted up anyway. So, we get to FP1, no issues. Signs are saying he's a little bit sick. That's kind of it. Then go to FP2.
He left media day early, but, like, you know what? It was just warm weather. Maybe it's just...
jet lag.
Too much.
Is there jet lag between Bahrain and Jeddah?
I don't think so.
Are they similar time zones?
Well, they're similar locations geographically.
So anyway.
I'm gonna say no.
So then gets to FP2. You're like, oh, okay, cool. FP2. Not really much is happening. The cars that are usually fastish are fastish. The ones that are kind of at the back of the grid are kind of at the back of the grid.
We've had some pleasant surprises from Aston Martin with Alonso doing relatively well. We've got some pleasant surprises from Russell. Mercedes, one car of the Mercedes is doing well with Russell doing great. So we've got a couple of not pleasant surprises, but emulating very similarly what was happening at Jeddah last year.
And then we go to bed and then we're like, okay, cool. We'll watch FP3 and qualifying together because based on the time zones, I think they aired that FP3 started at like 9:30 p.m.
Yeah. And no, or it was like 10:30 and 11 and then qualifying was at 1.
Anyway,
something like that.
Based on time zones, we'll just watch it the next day. Anyway, wake up. So Carlos Sainz has appendicitis.
To the point where he rocked up to the paddock for FP3 with a 39 degree fever. And the doctors were like,
no,
you need to go to hospital. So went to hospital and they need to find someone to drive for the second Ferrari seat.
And so their third driver who's been allocated is Mr. Oliver Bearman. Bearman.
Bearman.
Yeah. Anyway, Oliver Bearman, 18-year-old FP2 driver who coincidentally managed to get pole in the FP2 race, which he can now no longer compete in because he's driving in F1, his F1 debut.
But they didn't mention who was replacing him, so I think they're just not going to run that car.
I don't think they're replacing him. Wouldn't it make sense if they just shift everyone up the grid or they just have an empty
spot? I think they're just going to have an empty spot, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so he is debuting for Ferrari, one of the youngest ever Ferrari drivers to debut.
No, youngest ever drivers, let alone for Ferrari.
He's the third youngest. Youngest ever was Verstappen.
But ever for Ferrari.
Yeah, youngest ever for Ferrari. But the youngest ever was Verstappen at 17 years and something. Stroll just by like a couple of months shy, and then himself at being 18. Anyway, he's debuting underneath the number 38 because Carlos Sainz has appendicitis. Is this a reflection potentially of what happened with Alexander Albon and Nick DeVries coming in? Maybe, maybe not. But hey, good on. We've got a brand new driver on the race this weekend.
I think it probably won't be to the exact degree of what happened with Albon last year. Because when Albon went for his 2 weeks off and then
was it
we
two
had,
weeks?
Yeah, two or three weeks off and then we had DeVries come in instead. It was DeVries in a Williams. I think it's important to note the positioning of the person stepping in and the car's capability.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he ended up getting 10th. He got points on debut when it was at...
He got 10th. Yeah, 1 point. He got 1 point. Yeah.
When he raced in Italy. But I think it's important to note that Bearman isn't a Ferrari. Regardless of him being a rookie, the car should be capable of getting higher than whatever the car Nick DeVries was in last year was ever possible to gain.
Yeah, true. Anyway, so it gets to FP3 and then it's announced. So they're doing all the tests. They start FP3 normally. Okay, cool. FP3 is FP3-ing. And then that's not our car, is it? No. Anyway, sorry, we could hear a car alarm going off. Zhou Guanyu goes into a wall. His car is completely wrecked. He is unable to participate for the rest of FP3 and they suspect that he may not be ready for qualifying.
But just before that, Sargeant clips the wall. So we've had one yellow flag and one car already go back to the pits, not emerge out in FP3. And only just a few minutes after that, was when the Sauber spun, and it was really unfortunate the way that he
I think it ended up, he only had 6 minutes left. They only ended up having 6 minutes left because of the position where he crashed out in. They had to bring a crane and it was at a corner and, yeah, not the best.
It's, I feel really bad for him because we didn't see anyone crash out in Bahrain, but the way he crashed out was he damaged just, when he clipped the corner, his car spun, but the rear end of his car with the back left and the back right and the wing and everything attached there went straight in perpendicular to the barrier. The pressure of that flipped the car around so that the front end of his car wheels wing also got damaged. And you don't really notice too much because there's like plumes of smoke from where like the wheels have generated friction on the ground. But when they watch the replay and when they zoom out and the smoke is cleared, you can see that all of the brake rods and the connecting pieces of the wheel to the body and then the wing to the body, everything is just pointing in completely the wrong direction. So a lot of work for the team to, one, assess what was wrong, and then two, fix, because the turnaround for times between free practice session 3 and qualifying is limited at best, but also I think
it's like a couple of hours, like an hour, maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours at max.
Yeah, and I think it's also important to note that we haven't seen it so far this year, but there's effectively a limitation on how long you can work on the car until you cannot change the car ready for race day. So whatever you go into qualifying, the condition of your car, however you run the car in qualifying, is the condition that you need to run it in the actual race the next day, unless you want to take grid place penalties, either going to the back of the grid or starting in
pit lane.
The garage, depending on what you have. So we don't see how much damage is done, as in like an itemized list during FP3. But from when Joe crashed out, it was 17 minutes to go when he had his crash. But they were able, as Eleanor just mentioned, they were able to restart the session at 6 minutes left. And it's not often we see the red flag get cleared and then green to go again with that small amount of window left. But I'm glad they actually did for once.
I think the main thing is though, Joe was fine. He was completely fine. He went into one of the Tech Pro barriers. It wasn't like it was a wall or concrete. It was fine. He got out of the car and he walked away freely. But the key thing to mention is that with the 6 minutes left, probably around half the grid hadn't had a chance to run any soft tires yet. Do I really know what that means? No, I don't really know what that means. But apparently a lot of cars hadn't really had a chance to run the soft tyres. Whether that actually impacted them in qualifying, I don't think so. So going on to qualifying, we actually had qualifying predictions at the back end of last week.
When we found out that Science was not going to race for the weekend, I was like, oh, I'll go have a sneak peek to see if we'd put him in there. And I don't know. We knew that Science or whoever was going to replace him was not going to start in the top five. So go us.
Because we said, okay, so your top five was?
Qualifying prediction.
Qualifying predictions. Your top five was Norris, Verstappen, Piastri, Perez, Leclerc. I don't think you got
any right.
You got the people wrong positions. So
optimistic prediction.
Yeah, and I said Verstappen, Piastri, Norris, Russell, Perez. So the actual qualifying order is I get one point. You don't get any, sorry.
Yeah, because Verstappen was first. Second place was the qualifying was Leclerc.
Perez. Fourth was Alonso. And then fifth was Piastri. So you were very close with Piastri third, but not quite. And so that is the top five.
Maybe what I predicted will end up being the actual race finishing order.
Okay, true.
We don't know.
So the rest of the qualifying order is, that's the top five. Then Norris, Russell, Hamilton, Tsunoda and Stroll. Behrmann.
Rounding out the top 10.
Behrmann starts 11th. He was very close to getting into Q3. Mm. But you know what? That's just going to be more of a comeback if he manages to get points. He was like, I positioned outside of the point starting positions, and then I got points. Look at me go. And that's pretty, I reckon that'll be pretty impressive if he does manage to do that.
I think it's good. He is in a Ferrari, so there's capabilities of him finishing quite high up. But I think it's positive in a sense that it takes some of the pressure off of him. But I think, yeah, the pressure is you're in a Ferrari. You can go as fast as you want to go effectively. You could finish all the way up. In fact, not first because we've got Verstappen. But because your teammate is starting second, you have the potential of the car at to get up to second from wherever you're starting. But I think that this puts double the amount on Leclerc because it puts a – it shines a light onto, one, how Sainz is able to be comparable to what Leclerc is showing. He's equal in speed because you could – if we're talking about the car alone, anybody could get – should be equal. But with Behrmann starting lower, I think it also puts additional pressure on Leclerc to be like, well, here's your opportunity. You've been talking about how it's unfair of strategy, how poor decisions have made your car not able to go fast enough and we've made mistakes and rah, 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 not being able to finish higher and it's not good enough. I think he has been given the opportunity to go, all right, I effectively have no competition from my teammate this weekend. There is no reasoning for why the Ferrari team would call team orders and make Behrmann be able to go higher than Leclerc because he's starting out of the top five, hell, even out of the top 10, that the pressure is on Leclerc to go, well, you know what? There's no reason why you should not be able to perform. You don't have teammate conflict. You are starting second. There is no single thing that he could effectively put his finger against to be why he does not achieve at least a second. So I think if he doesn't perform, regardless of where the blame may be, I think it is a clear scenario to show how does he react when everything should be perfect without the pressure of starting on first.
See, I was going to say there's no pressure for Behrmann at all. Yeah, there's pressure because it's his first time in an F1 car. Yeah, it's his debut. He should be able to get points. But in reality, there is no pressure because the guy has really only had half an hour in the car before the qualifying session. And then in the race, if he does not crash out, if he finishes the race, great. Like, there is, it's probably the best position for Behrmann to come into to debut for F1 because it's not like he's had three practice sessions to warm up. It's not like he's had a lot of time to get in his head.
I think it's better than what De Vries was in last year because by the time that De Vries stepped in for Albon in September or whenever it was, May, one of them, he had already done the free practice sessions for AlphaTauri at that stage. I think he had also done it for
Sauber?
No, he'd done it
Mercedes?
For like
Mercedes?
McLaren. He'd done it for like two other teams at that point, but not the Williams. Maybe he had done the Williams? One of those. So he had a few, not just sessions under his belt in an F1 car, but sessions under his belt in an F1 car for different teams at different tracks. Whereas Behrmann doesn't have any of that.
No, he's a fresh-eyed 18-year-old. If he just finishes the race, good on him. And then he's got a level of experience under his belt. And then he can go back into F2. And so for the rest of the grid, we then have, speaking of Alex Albon, he starts 12th, Magnussen, Ricciardo, Hülkenberg, Bottas, Ocon, Gasly, Sargeant, and Zhou. So Zhou did manage to come out in the qualifying session in Q1.
Was slowest, but his car was turned around, which is amazing, not just to the team, but on making the car quick enough in order to get it on, because there's like the track
limit. There's a limit or something.
Yeah, you have to at least place a time in order to be qualified.
I don't think he placed a time. I think
But he was able to. Yeah. No, he did place a time, but it didn't count.
It ended up, he was doing his outlap, and then his outlap, he was like a couple of seconds short, so it just says no time.
Ah, but he was out. Yeah. So good on him and the team around him to be able to get the car not just going, but to a point where they think it is quick enough to go for the race, which is well done, every mechanic on that side there.
Yeah, that's literally it. Not much has really happened, but predictions.
One more thing I want to talk about Behrmann is everyone has been very – I don't think anyone's putting any expectations on him, but everyone's like, it is so nice to see a brand new face amongst everyone because For the reserve drivers and the junior drivers that we've seen in the past few years, it has been the same faces. Not that that's a bad thing. I mean, there's been very few seats opening up in F1 over the past couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
But it's rare that we've seen a new face beyond the same Formula 2 and 3 drivers who have finished those divisions into placement into F1, and Bemmer's a new one, which is just nice to see.
Because who was the person who did all the testing for Ferrari last year? Robert, what's his name?
Schwartzman, and we've had Giovinazzi do a bunch of it as well. I know that at least Schwartzman has been involved in the WEC racing, and then a few of the other reserve drivers across other teams have been involved in that too. But anyway, great opportunity for Bemmer just to see one. Hopefully he does well to be the incentive of you can put more junior drivers on the grid in favor of more senior drivers, and you won't necessarily lose out. What you would lose, you would gain in other ways.
Exactly. So your predictions for the race, your predictions for the race.
Verstappen will be first.
Yep. Who second?
Alonso.
Oh, Fernando Alonso. Yeah, go on.
Perez.
Oh, okay, yep.
Leclerc.
Okay, yep. So you're swapping
Piastri. And I would like to say my
wild card
will be Stroll. I think Stroll will do well.
Stroll. Okay, so I'm going to say Verstappen. I'm then going to say Perez. And then I'm going to say Alonso. I agree with you, Leclerc, as fourth.
I don't think he'll be able to turn it around and be able to get a podium.
I think the
He'll be close, but not close enough.
Verstappen first, because Verstappen. I think Perez second, because the car is so fast. Even if Perez does make a couple of mistakes, he'll be able to work through it because of the car and how the track is.
But he had such a successful year last year, so he's going off the
back
with
his track
with additional confidence of going, I know I can win this, and I've done it well.
Exactly, and that's the reason why I've put Alonso third.
And that's the reason why I put Alonso second, because Alonso was like, well,
I'm good.
I did well last year.
I'm
good enough this year.
But and the reason
my team loves me, and I think I can get a podium.
I'm in my 40s. I'm due a win soon.
Yeah, because
I reckon he'll get close. He'll get close
because like Leclerc loves Ferrari. Ferrari love Leclerc, but that doesn't mean that it's a functional relationship. Whereas I think Aston Martin, every time they do well, they're like, oh my god, we're doing well, and then that for some reason fuels Alonso to being like, well, you know what? I can't get rid of me yet. I'm going to do something that no one thought this car could do. Ha ha. So, all right. So we've got the same rationale. Who do you think is going to be fifth?
The reason why I put Leclerc fourth is that
second to fourth is realistic.
Even though he's starting second, unfortunately, it hurts to say as a Ferrari fan, Ferrari will get their strategy wrong, or they will do something wrong with the pit stop.
Which will
cause him to move back.
I think
combined with Leclerc's own mistakes, I don't think he'll be able to stay second.
I disagree in a different way. I think that the McLaren is actually very quick. When you look at all of the timings.
You said McLaren fifth. I'm talking about fourth.
I know. But I don't think it'll be a big gap between Leclerc and Piastri. I think it'll be quite close.
I'm saying there's going to be a gap between Alonso and Leclerc.
I agree. So I reckon fourth and fifth will be really tight. But the McLaren's,
third and fourth, no.
The McLarens were doing really well through all of the practice sessions. Not quite at the 1-2-3, but they were consistently up there, and I think we shouldn't discount anyone from them.
See, I differ. I think
picked a different McLaren.
I picked a different McLaren. I picked the Norris. I didn't pick the Piastri. So, yes, Lando, please win. Prove all of us wrong.
Oh, you know what? I will happily, I mean, to be honest, even if I make a mistake now, I have no qualms about it. But if any race that is won by Norris or Piastri this year, good on them.
Oh, good on them.
Yeah.
And you know what? I want, my wild card is going to be Bearman. Wild card purely if he gets points.
But you know what?
If he gets points, good on him. Good on him.
I think Verstappen is by far the best driver to get whatever is in the Red Bull. The car is perfect for him, and he is perfect for the car. But you know what? It would be actually really mentally taxing for him going week on week, race by race. A lot of, at least from when you hear about the interviews, the drivers love
competing in this type of sport because they're able to go, okay, I just want to pip the person to the post. I can see my competitor right there. They're really close, and that gives you the motivation to beat him. I'm using him because all the drivers
get,
in the
you
F1.
You would get bored.
And I think
I would get bored.
He has not had effectively any competition since 2022. Because last year, the car was just really good and good on him.
The only competition was Singapore.
But the thing is whenever – and he did really well in Singapore considering where he
moved
started.
From like 15th up into like what, 6th?
And you could see in all of the interviews, he wasn't even upset.
He was happy. He was like, yeah, I got to do
things. He was like, oh, I got to do things. And you could see in the post-race interviews last week how Verstappen was looking back at all the overtakes from the other cars. And you could see that he was happy again. And it's very rare. He seems humble that he wins, but –
he doesn't seem upset. Don't get us wrong.
No, I don't think he seems upset, but I think he seems a little bit bored. And there's been a few.
He misses being in the pack.
Yeah, and I've seen a few TikToks over the last week being like the real time gap between Verstappen and everyone else.
And he is the videos from the stands.
Yeah, and Verstappen is just in his own little world. He could be driving on an empty track in an empty stadium and it wouldn't make a difference. That's what it looks like. So it would actually be really hard. I think it'd be harder for him to stay motivated to actually try to be first outside of qualifying. I think qualifying is okay because everyone's really next to each other.
Yeah, go.
But I think in an actual race, it would be so hard to be motivated to try and push well because your teammate doesn't give you any competition and neither can any of the cars. I think just keep in the back of mind, I don't think it's going to be a while. But I think it's going to be sooner rather than later that Verstappen calls quits because he's just plain bored. You can only do a job in life for so long when there's no challenge before it just eats you up.
I reckon he'll finish this current era with this current car. I reckon he'll do one season in 2026 with the new car, and if it's still too good and like way good,
even if it isn't good, then he's like perfect.
Yeah. What I'm saying is that
if
the car is amazing still and Newey has done an amazing job again and Red Bull still seem to dominate, he'll get bored and I don't think he'll stay in that season. I think he'll end up retiring. But that being said,
I don't know, because Verstappen strikes me as a person not to end on a high but to go, you know what, I've had my high, I'll do a year not doing great and go, you know what,
Vettel,
this is a nice full circle.
He'll do a Vettel.
I would love it if he does, but not the sense of like, oh, I want to move to another team, but be like, okay, I know the person who's my teammate this year is going to stay on. Let me help them be a better driver. I would love to see that because Verstappen strikes me as a person to be like, I'm good from skill and I'm good from talent, but that can be learned to a degree.
True. Okay. The only other thing is that I think you pointed out at the very end of the session something about Audi. That's the only dot point I have left.
So it's been confirmed that Audi has the sufficient funds to purchase the Sauber team effective for 2026. There is still finalizing of details to confirm if that purchase is going to be outright for 2025 season, but confirmed they will be the owner of the Sauber team name for 2026 at a minimum, with a 50-50% at this chance, at this moment, for chancing them being the 2025 name. So I think we'll only
like
see
Alba Sauber.
Audi. Oh,
okay.
So enjoy this iteration of lime green and black because it is at the moment unlikely that we will see it next year. So maybe only one more year with bright green. I like it though.
It's
good to see. I like green as a color anyway, so it's nice to see it and it's easy to see.
Anyway, that was a short one. I don't really have anything else left to put down. We'll come back tomorrow. Maybe Monday, maybe not.
We shall see.
Whatever we say, we usually don't end up sticking to.
Whenever the races are in the middle of the evening, anything goes.
If you're a reader, you'll understand this. If not, apologies. But we're mood recorders. If we don't feel like recording, we don't. If we do, we do.
Like mood reading. If you want to read the same genre of book for 6 months, you will, and then not read again for 5 years. That's what I'll do. I won't force myself to do it. And recording is the same way.
Exactly. Anyway, thank you for listening. Until tomorrow, or maybe Monday, or maybe the next week, or whatever.
Enjoy the race.
2 weeks' time, we have Australia.
Yes, so if this episode seems a little bit more dull because I know Australia is in sight and I'm so excited for the Melbourne race.
Anyway.
Not that I'm not excited for Jeddah, but I'm just really more excited for Melbourne. And then we get China. Woo!
But the thing is, like, it's like before Singapore. Any race before Singapore is kind of a meh. When we get to Singapore, we're like, yes, Singapore.
Yeah.
And then the race after, you're kind of like, it wasn't Singapore.
Exactly. And then we get to anything before Brazil, we're like, oh, then we get to Brazil. Like, oh, my God, it's Brazil.
Anyway, thank you for listening. Until tomorrow, Grid Gas Bags out.
Bye.